Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome, everybody, to the Hockey Think Tank podcast brought to you by the hockeythinktank.com, a website for all players, parents, and coaches to go to get a little bit of education and a little bit of inspiration regarding the greatest game on the planet. We are starting a brand new little thing here where obviously I am out in Chicago right now for all of the listeners that have been with us for a while, and we're going to be doing something called the Windy City Storm Roundtable. And so the youth organization that I am working with, I am surrounded by some really, really awesome and smart hockey people. So we are riffing around this kind of big Rodecaster hardware that I have that's hooked up to some microphones, and we are just going to sit around and talk some hockey. So every couple weeks we're going to be doing this, and I got a couple smart guys here with me, and we're going to talk today about back check, track, reload, whatever you want to call it, getting back to your side of the ice. But it's going to be a lot of fun here today. So I got a couple good guys, and I'm going to let them introduce themselves first. We got Rob Rassi. Rass, you want to introduce yourself to the listeners?
What an introduction. I've never had the pleasure of listening to it live before, but thanks for the intro, Toph. I'm Rob Rassi. I'm new out here in Chicago as well. We just started a TPH Academy out in the suburbs here in Chicago, so excited to be here and excited to join that. I spent the last 2 years as a scout for the Detroit Red Wings, covered the Midwest United States, mostly USHL stuff, and prior to that, I spent 6 years as an assistant coach at Harvard, coaching against this fine gentleman here. So excited to be here.
Awesome. And then right to his left is Ryan Ward, our hockey director here with Windy City. So Wardle, let you introduce yourself as well.
Thanks, Toph. This is like a bucket list thing, huh, Rass? Like, this is awesome to be on the think tank. My name is Ryan Ward. I'm the hockey director here with the Windy City Storm. You know, kind of a journeyman now. Spent some time with the New York Islanders, Toronto Maple Leafs, Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds, Selects Academy in Connecticut, now here out with the Tri-City Storm as the Director of Player Development and the Hockey Director for the Windy City Storm.
All right, I like it. So let's get right to it here, guys. So I wanted to talk about tracking, back-checking to start, call it what you will, because for me and Rass, we were talking about this even before we got on here, like, it's one of the most important things in hockey, but maybe not necessarily the one most talked about. Especially at the youth levels from everything that I've encountered. But it's really just a huge part to like developing your identity as a team, you know? So I'll go to you first here, Rass. Like, why do you think the track and back check is so important, to the identity of a team, and why should we be talking about it more?
Yeah, I think when you talk about a lot of the way, if you watch the NHL games, everyone always talks about playing fast, right? And if you want to play fast in today's game, it has to be going both ways, right? You can't only just play fast, turn it on when we get the puck on our stick and let's go. You got to have the puck on your stick first. And I think if you have a team with an identity that tracks back through the middle hard, can force turnovers, it allows your defensemen to gap up strong, allows you to force some turnovers to the neutral zone and opportunities for transition that way too. So it's not just preventing goals as much as it is, we want to get the puck and we want to go. And that all starts with the pressure that you provide coming back up the ice.
Yeah, for sure. I can't remember who it was that I was listening to at some point, but they were tight with Scotty Bowman back in the days when he was like the coach of the Red Wings and coaching, like, you know, these Hall of Famers, all these guys that have put up a million points in their career. And they almost framed everything that they did in terms of offense. So, like, we are doing this defensively, tracking-wise, so we can get the puck, like what you're saying, and transition and then go play on offense. And I think that's something, like, if you're coaching a team with talented players that, you know, you have to get sometimes creative and getting them to buy into play,
know,
defensively. So, like, you know, that's one of those things where it's just a great way tracking-wise if you want to frame it in a way of everything offense, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, and I think it's, yeah, it's not a fun thing to do, right? It doesn't show up on the stat sheet. So when you get players that want to buy in to do it, it's got to be part of the team identity, right? It has to be part of the bigger picture. It's not something that you're going to see highlights of on the NHL Network when you turn it on and watch the five-minute recaps of the games, right? It's something that doesn't show up on the stat sheet but is just as important as anything that does.
Yeah, totally. And Wardle, for you too, because, like, coming out here, you know, we grew up, it was back check. Everybody talked about back check. And I feel like now the terminology is a little bit more track. You got to track and get back. But I never heard of what you called it in reload. And I guess it's kind of a little bit of what we're talking about and framing it in a way where it's almost like getting it to where we want to get the puck back and go the other way. Like, where did you hear that first? And, like, what does reload mean to you?
Yeah, I think for me, Toph, you know, Anthony Noreen and I talked a lot about it. I think I heard it, you know, in Toronto with Sheldon, and then Sault Ste. Marie, we really focused on it. But at the end of the day, like, we talk about, you know, like, the controlling the controllables all the time, you know, we kind of talk about it. And as much as it's not fun, Ras, it's easy, right? It's a decision for our guys to make. So, like, when we talk about reloading, like, it's so much easier to come downhill in the offensive zone when you've gotten above the puck. And that's where it's like, okay, we don't have the puck, let's reload above it. You know what I mean? And that's the very simple term where our guys have, for, you know, better or worse, they've really, like, taken a that's part of their identity. You know, like, all of our teams here with the Storm, like, I think we hit on that day one, like, hey, we're reloading, we're getting above the puck, and we're coming downhill every time. And I think when you celebrate, like you said, Ras, like, it's not anything that's on the NHL Network, but it's something that's in every single one of our meetings as coaches
100%,
here.
100%, yeah.
You know what I mean? So as much as it might not be celebrated on the NHL Network, like, I can tell you that, and you guys know, like, we celebrate that huge here with the Storm, just getting above the puck and making sure there's no room, and we're dictating how play goes.
So talk to me about, like, being above the puck, because sitting here talking, the three of us, like, I've talked a lot about tight and above in every conversation like this that I've had, and I feel like a lot of youth coaches, they don't understand what tight and above means. You know, it's always a question that I get, what do you mean by that, what do you mean by that? So if you can, just, like, explain what you mean about getting above the puck.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, it's funny, like, when you break down a hockey game, it's a very simple, to me, it's very simple to break it down. You know what I mean? Like, okay, when you're getting above the puck, like, that's literally what you're doing. You're getting above the puck on the defensive side between your puck and the net. It's very simple. So if the more you get above, the opponent has no space, right? You're dictating where they have to go on the ice from a spatial awareness standpoint. But for us, like, just getting above is working to be above the puck. Like, that is simply what it is.
And it can get broken down, too. I agree with you, right? Like, it's getting above the puck. It's an easy thing to focus on from a player's perspective, too, right? If you're a player that might be struggling, you might be in a slump, whatever it is, and you start overthinking things, a great way to simplify your game, if you have to focus on a couple of things throughout the game, when you don't have the puck, get above it. Right, if you work to get above the puck when you don't have it, and you keep that in your mind that every time your team doesn't have the puck, I'm going to work back, you have to skate, right? You're going to be involved. You're going to involve yourself in the game, and then things start to flow from there. It's one of the easiest things, like you said, Wardle, like, it's an easy thing to focus on. It's just, it's if you make that a point as a player, your game can start to build from there. It's a great way to start.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you guys have coached at some higher levels, obviously, and Wardle, you've been in the NHL as a coach. Like, what are the conversations in the coaches' rooms in a Toronto, you know, in a St. Louis or some of these other places when it comes to tracking? Like, how important is it to these NHL teams, and maybe what are some of the things that they're talking about as well?
Yeah, I mean, at that level, Toph, honestly, it's just non-negotiable. You know what I mean? The guys who don't do it aren't there. And I think it all feeds into, you know, hockey's played in a 200x85 enclosed arena, right? So it all feeds together, right? So you know, the premium for coaches these days is you know, you want to have your D have tight gaps and make sure that they're skating forward with slash support guys, that they're, well, D can't do that if there's no reloads, no back checking, no tracking, right? Like your D can't stand, they can't be tight, they can't give no room. You have to have faith that your buddies are going to do their job, and if they do their job, then you can, as a defenseman, you can be right up on guys and take those risks to close gaps and leave no space. And really, the way that NHL's played today and pro and college, like, there's no space, right? There's just no space. And even at the youth levels, you see the coaching getting better, the player education getting better. But it's just, to me, like, the best teams I've ever seen in hockey always track. Like, they always just track their ass off.
And like, on the other side, like, the hardest teams to play against. I mean, we played against each other when you were at Harvard and I was at Cornell, and you do the video scouts and you see the goals against averages of some of the teams that you're playing. The common denominator was the track.
100%.
You know?
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's such a big part of what you're talking about in the game right now. Everybody wants to kill the play fast.
100%.
Everybody wants to take away time and space fast. And if you want to play that way, you want your defense to be up and gap. If you don't have guys coming back hard, you're going to be putting up six, or the other team's going to be putting up five, six, seven spots on you every night.
For sure. And the way that, you know, even the way that we teach our defensemen to defend the rush, they need a tracker there to support, because we're getting outside the dots. We're killing plays in the neutral zone. We're not staying inside the dots and falling inside the defensive zone. Like, we want our D to be aggressive, kill plays, and that allows us to win the transition. And on an offensive side, when you're tracking out of the offensive zone, you're in a position to go the other way on a turnover, on a neutral zone regroup, or a quick up, where you're already in your spot. So now you have your entry structure figured out, you're building your rush offense off of your back checking and tracking.
Yeah, that's true. So, Ras, you had the chance to coach some pretty special kids at Harvard. You're talking about the VCs and the Kerfoots and the Killorns and things like that. From a forward standpoint, was that something with some of those highly, highly talented players that you really needed to get them to buy into? Is it something that they learned beforehand and it was something they knew? Like, how did you go about managing some of these high, high offensive players when doing that?
Yeah, and I think it was something that we had to instill. You know what I mean? It's at a certain level in junior hockey or amateur hockey, whatever it is, but as you go up levels, the expectations are higher. And like you said, Wardo, like, it gets to a point where you reach a certain level, it's non-negotiable, right? Everybody does it or everybody doesn't. And at Harvard, Teddy, that's a big thing that he has with forwards, no matter who you are. The expectation is, you have to get above the puck. You have to track hard. There are games and we could be up two or three goals, whatever it is. And if guys late in game would ever take a shift off on the back check, you'd hear about it. So that was just a constant communication from the coaching staff, and especially Teddy. That was one of the big things that he was on, no matter who you were. And it helped, especially if you get those top guys to buy in and they do it. One of the best kids that we had at doing it was when I was at Harvard, was one of Jimmy Vesey's line mates, Kyle Criscolo.
Oh,
great player. Like, he ended up having, still playing a nice career in the American leagues, played a couple games in the NHL, but
if he was 3 inches taller, he would be in the NHL.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, he's one of those guys that, just a coach's dream, like one of those guys that does everything the right way. And he was an animal when it came to tracking and providing back pressure. So, and it's carved out a nice career for him. You know, I mean, his game is translated well. And he's a heck of a hockey player.
You know, it's funny. When I was working with Scott Gordon with the Islanders, I came in halfway through the year, and on the wall of the Nassau Coliseum, we had in our locker room, we had this poster or this picture, and it said "Run 110." And I was like, "What does that mean?" I obviously missed the message in training camp because I was still in college, and I left college and went straight to the Islanders to work on the coaching staff. But so "Run 110" was. And for everyone listening, like, a great YouTube is Ben Watson from the New England Patriots, right? So I grew up in Boston. I'm a Patriots fan. But Ben Watson had this game. It was I think it was on Halloween night. It was a full moon, Foxborough Stadium. They ended up losing, I believe, to the Denver Broncos. However, there was this play in the game where Brady threw an interception, and Watson was the intended receiver in the end zone, okay? So it was a play that Champ Bailey, I believe it was Champ Bailey, ran the play. Like, he was gone. It was a pick six from all the way. But this clip on YouTube of Ben Watson, he ran Champ Bailey down 110 yards from where he started in the end zone.
He's a tight end too, right?
Yes, he's a tight end. So he basically, and it was a pretty great little like documentary. Like, the Patriots only put up pictures of their wins in their locker room, but this was like the one photo that they would have from a loss would be Ben Watson chasing this guy down. But it really, where that kind of clicked for me was Ben Watson said, you know what, I could have given up on the play and no one would have said anything to me. Right, but his college coach in Georgia said, like, hey, like, you don't give up till the whistle blows. You don't, you just go. So the clip's great because Ben Watson's sitting there and he talks about how his helmet's going and all he sees is, like, his helmet bouncing and then he had to run into the referee. He got by the referee and it was more of, like, a challenge for himself to catch the guy who intercepted the ball, and he actually tackled him at the one-yard line, knocked the ball out, and if the officials made the correct call, it would have been a touchback for the Patriots, but they made the wrong call.
Spoken like a true Patriots.
Right. I mean,
always making excuses.
You can fact check it. You can fact check it.
All right.
But when I think about that and how much you can relate to these young players, like these young players control that, right? Like, it's just heart and the willingness to battle through it. And you know what? Just say, I'm not going to give up on any single play that happens. And that really is the essence of tracking and back checking, isn't it? Like, hey, I can control how hard I get back to the D zone. Like, I'm going to be a good teammate and do this.
I like that.
For sure. And I think one thing too is, as you go up in levels too, right? As you go from bantams to midgets and you go from midgets to juniors and juniors to college and college to pro, the margins are small. Right, the margins between the NHL and the American League, the margins between Division One and Division Three,
so small.
The margins between the USHL and the North American League, and as a player, if especially like you're an offensive player, right? You're not gonna from midget hockey to the USHL, you're probably not gonna score your first year. It's a hard thing to do, and if you had 50 in midgets, maybe you'll get, who knows? Say maybe you get 10. That's 50 other games you go in a 60-game season without scoring. What are you going to bring to the team? What are you going to bring to the lineup? What 100%. Is the coach going to say, hey, I can rely on this guy. He's going to bring it every night. He's going to give us energy. Because at the end of the day, there's going to be nights when you're not going to have it. You're not going to – puck's not going to bounce your way. It might bounce over your stick, no matter if you're an offensive player or whoever it is, up and down the lineup, especially as a forward. Like, it's hard. So anything that you can do, and this is something that, like Wardo said, you can control that. And you can say the coaches are in the locker room when they're putting the lineup on the board. We know that this guy's going to bring it every night. And it's a big part, not just from a coaching perspective, but from a college or from a scouting perspective as well. Like, yeah. That's something that, as a scout the past 2 years, you watch kids play a lot of hockey games, and they're not always going to score. They're not always going to have it. But if they're – you see certain players that have established that as their identity, it stands out. And you know that this player, we're not going to have to convince this guy to play the way that we want to play, you know? Yeah. And it was something that we look for.
Yeah, I want to go even further with that too, because Benny Sy, who I worked with at Cornell for the listeners, like, for me, he's one of the best talent evaluators in college hockey. And he used to call that a B game. So when the A game, the offense, the numbers, the skill, when that's not there, and like you said, it's a 60-game season in juniors, you're not going to have your A game in all 60 games. For sure. Might have it in, nope. If you're really good, you might have it in 25, maybe 30. If you're elite, maybe 35. You know, that leaves a lot of time where you're just not going to have your A game. And so for the kids that are listening, like, if you don't have your A game and there's no B game there, there's no track, there's no compete, there's no passion, I'm crossing you off the list. I'm probably not going to come see you again. If your coach tells me that you have an A game and I don't see it, but I see you tracking hard and I see you competing and I see you have the passion, I'm going to come back and watch you play, or I'm going to watch your last five games on video or something like that. It's just, you're so right from a scouting perspective. It can put you, for the kids, it can put you in a position where you're a lot more marketable, if that's what you want to call it, to whatever scouts or coaches are coming to watch you.
Yeah, and like, you know, like, as well as I do, how extended you can get from a recruiting perspective or a scouting perspective. You might only see kids play, you know what I mean? You might only get a chance to pop in and see a kid for a period or a game, and you don't know who's watching when, you know, because there's so much to see and so many places to be. If like what I always say, like if you can, if someone comes in to watch you play five shifts, are they going to know what kind of hockey player you are? Are they going to be able to say, I this guy has this identity as a player? And I think, like you said, like it's huge.
Yeah.
It's huge.
I don't think anyone that's ever tracked their butt off and broken up a two-on-one has ever felt bad about themselves. And I don't think they've ever gotten back to the bench and not been congratulated by their entire team. So
for
it's
sure.
Something that I know for me, like, just talking about rush coverage and tracking and back checking, like it's something that we celebrate on a day-to-day basis. I mean, I showed video to my little U13 team yesterday, and seven of the identification clips were back checking and reloading and getting above. And the kids love it. They're clapping for each other. And I mean, that's just part of being an unbelievable teammate is putting your balls on the line like that for your group.
Yeah, it kind of starts with the coaches too. Like, you got to celebrate that stuff,
for
get
sure.
excited for it on Absolutely. The bench when it happens, and players just absolutely feed off it.
100%.
That's good. So another hockey thing when it comes to track that I wanted to talk about with you guys that I think would be good was like how important it is through the middle. I think you mentioned it earlier, back through the middle. I mean, that's one of our like just main things that we talk about almost every day is when the puck goes away from you, you're back hard through the middle. Whether you're the F1 and the puck's going up now, whether you're an F2 or 3 that's on the wall, puck goes the other way, back above the center. Like, why do you guys think that that is so important when it comes to, you know, denying plays, denying rushes, being tough to play against? Wardle, I'll ask you first on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I think any skilled player or any skilled team wants the least amount of confrontation as possible, right? And if you're talking about getting above through the middle of the ice or returning to the D zone through the middle of the ice, now you're forcing your opponents to make plays through 4, 5, 6 sticks, right? And that's not easy. So number one, you're stacking the deck from a percentage standpoint of being able to get the puck through the middle of the ice, which is obviously the most dangerous place to have the puck. Number two, like you're just making it almost physically impossible to execute a high-end play that has to go through the middle of the ice, right? So when you're chasing your stick through the neutral zone, through the offensive zone, everyone wants to try to get the puck into the middle of the ice. Everyone wants to try to get the puck, you know, to the weak side where there aren't so many players. At the end of the day, if you're going through the middle of the ice and you're clogging the middle, and Mike Babcock used to call it a muddy track, like if you're making that a muddy track, then your odds of turning the puck over and winning transitions are hugely in your favor.
I like that. That's really cool. Muddy track.
Yeah, muddy track. Like clogathon.
The clogathon. Now, another thing I wanted to ask you guys, too, how important is communication when it comes to the track and the back check? I feel like, and I get reminded of it at the beginning of every single year, there's always like a healthy but sometimes unhealthy tension between the D and the forwards, whether it's give me the puck while you're not there and you're not open, whether it's on the back check, I was supposed to take this guy or that guy. Ras, like, how important is communication when we're with the stuff that we're talking about right now?
I think it's huge. I think it's everything. I think if there's any sort of delay or miscommunication between the forward who's tracking back and the D who's on the strong side of the ice, it's gonna cause some indecision, right? The coach that I played for in college always used to say, make the other guy's jobs on the ice easy, right? So if you're coming back 100 miles an hour through the middle of the ice and the D sees that, he sees you talking, he's got the middle of the ice, it's going to make him more confident in his ability to take away space on the entry, right? So, and if the D is hounding to the forward, say, hey, you got this guy, you got this speed, he's going to slide through the middle of the ice, it makes that forward's job a lot easier. And he's only got to do one thing, right? The one, I can't believe I'm going to say this, I heard it 1,000 times in college, but chase one rabbit, right? Don't try and, so he always used to say, I can't believe I'm talking about this, but if when a fox
we
goes...
We become our elders, right?
I know, right? Yeah. Oh, yeah. When a fox goes to hunt a pack of rabbits, he can't go in there and try to chase all of them, right? So when he's got here, he's just going to end up running around in a circle. You got to go in there, you got to pick one, you got to go after it, right? So that's the same thing in this. Like if a forward's coming back through the ice and he's trying to do three different things, he's probably not going to do any of them very well. But if he's coming back through the middle of the ice with one task on his mind, say, I'm going to get back through the middle, I'm going to take away the middle of the ice, I'm going to yell to the D, D's going to slide up and we're going to get going the other way, right? It just allows the other guys on the ice to be more effective and allows that guy to do his job a little bit better.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah. So kind of going with that, like, I want to ask you guys this because I've been in multiple different coaches' rooms where something like this, and a lot of times when there's breakdowns, it happens when the D gets outside the dots and the forwards aren't tracking back through the middle, right? And that's where a lot of the crap happens. Are you guys more, I've been in so many debates like this, it's hilarious. Like, are you guys more for D playing between the dots and the forwards tracking the guy if he's got the puck on the wall? Or would you rather have the D get over, have the forward get back through the middle and pick up from there? Have you guys had these?
Absolutely.
It's such a big debate.
Yeah, I try to simplify it the best I can for our players. So basically, if F3, which is your essentially first tracking forward, if you're above the puck, you hunt the puck. The D fall inside the dots, right? So if F3 is above the puck, you're hunting it. And the D fall inside and read the rush. And that's where the communication happens. But I firmly believe that the structure you put in place as a coach protects the individual player. So, like, they know. F3's above, like, you're going. And the D are saying, yeah, go, go, go. But if you're below the puck and you're chasing, the D are going to slide outside the dots, kill the play, and your job is middle wide. So now if that guy's going to make a play to the back post, he's got to go through the strong side D stick, the weak side D stick, and the tracker stick to get that puck to the back post, and ultimately the goalie, we tell the goalie, if they're going to hit the seam on that, you've got the weak side. So I think when you delineate what's going on, like, okay, F3 above hunt, very simple. F3 below, you're tracking middle wide, the D are going to kill the play, and we're going to force that as soon as they kick the puck out or try to go wide outside the dots. Strong side D slide, weak side D takes the middle driver, and our tracker gets middle wide. That's kind of what we say. And to me, it's very simple. Like, above hunt, below you're tracking.
How about you, Ras?
I agree. I think I think it comes from the message that the coaches send to the players too, right? Is make it clear.
Yeah.
Make it simple, right? The hockey's a fast game. There's a lot of things that you can adjust and you have to think about things in split seconds, right? You don't have time to sit back from a bird's eye view and analyze the way that the game's going. You're a player, you're coming back as hard as you can. You have to know, I'm doing this or I'm doing that. And the less indecision in that player's mind of what he has to do on the ice allows him to do that better, right? It allows everybody to get on the same page and allows the team to be more effective.
Yeah. Love that.
And I think that's why, like, tracking, honestly, Ras, like, when we talk about, like, just, like, celebrating, like, the hard work, if a guy is tracking his butt off, it doesn't really matter what happens after that because you're going to have layers. You know what I mean? So that's, like, the controllable
it's
part.
It's almost like mistake-proof. I don't want to say mistake-proof,
no,
but you're limiting
it. You can live
it
with those mistakes,
yeah.
Right?
If hard, aggressive.
Right.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. All right, so to end this thing off here, I thought it would be good to, you know, we obviously, I feel like, have given some pretty good information here about the track, but, like, if we're talking to some youth coaches and we're in a room with them, what are maybe some things that we can do in terms of, like, drill design or things to talk about in practice that can actually help the kids that we're coaching to be able to learn how important it is to track and kind of get that muscle memory. So I don't know if you guys have, like, a drill or specific things that you like to work on breaking it down. Like, Wardle, for you first, like, maybe what are some things that you do in practice to do this?
Yeah, I think number one, like, I always, and for any youth coach and player, like you have to be concise with your identity without the puck. Like, I think that number one, every team I've coached for probably the last 5 years, the first thing I tell them in day one of training camp is tracking wins championships. If you track, if you reload, if you're above the puck, you will win. Because I don't care how talented the other team is, if there's no space, they cannot play with the puck, right? So number one, tracking wins championships. And to me, honestly, like, you build that through training camp, through your first few weeks of the season. And like anything else, like, start with baby steps. Like, I don't care. I've been at the junior level, and we've got 18-year-old players who are the best on their team in midget major or whatever, and they don't know how to track. They don't know how to read the game. And it's like, start with half-ice tracks where it's a two-on-one, and the forward and the D have to communicate with the tracking forward, and start with that. And then you get into reading the rush and giving the offensive guys more creativity and teaching the D how to slide outside the dots and kill a play in the neutral zone. And for any of the listeners here, if you guys, if anyone has any questions about practice drills, I think we have about 50 of them that we can be happy to share. But honestly, you start with the foundation. No tracking drill is too simple. At the end of the day, you build in your identity on the fact that, hey, it's just work to track. So do a couple of drills at the beginning of the year where you're just working to get above the puck and track, communicating with the D. And then you kind of build in your principles and your layers as a coach as to specific reads, like on a delay, who takes the delay, things like that. So I think really just being crystal clear on your identity and the expectations of, hey, every single one of our players is going to work to get back above the puck. Like, that is the number one thing.
Love it. How about you, Ras?
Yeah, I think I agree with you, Bordo. I think the biggest thing, especially early on, a coach can do is isolate the incident that you're trying to work on, right? So if you're trying to focus on the importance of a track and you want to start teaching, especially those reads, right? If you the trade-off between the strong side defenseman and the tracking forward, isolate the incident. Start everybody in an offensive zone, five-man offensive zone play, put a forward on the weak side of the ice, give him the puck, tell him to skate up the wall. Everybody tracks back. Let that forward and the D communicate how to handle that situation, whether the F3's got it, he's going to get above it. If he doesn't, D's going to slide and take it and then turn it. And it's a good way, too, that you can add something like that instead of doing a basic rush drill. Do a rush drill off of transition, off a track. You know, have those guys turn the puck over and then whip back up the ice on an odd man rush going the other way. So you can build that into a lot of different drills, but I think isolating it, any incident that you're trying to teach and that you want to try and enforce, isolate it as easily as you can and have the guys do it. And they say, oh, there it is, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like, and we have these debates all the time too. It's like, it's the mentality versus the tactic.
Right.
Like, if the mentality's there, you can get away with the tactic not being as perfect.
100%.
So in your first, like what you guys are saying, your first couple of weeks of practice, and even as you're going through, like, you can kind of work in the video and all that, but let's make sure that, hey, every time that puck's going back the other way, it's first three steps, see you later.
Yeah, I think another huge thing for youth coaches and youth players, like, when you're done with a drill, like, If you really break down the transition from offense to defense, everyone wants to play offense, right? And the same thing, like, when your rep is done on a shooting drill or a small area game and your rep is done and you're done with your shot, you're like, okay, I did my job here, I got my shot. No, like, sprint out of the zone, sprint out of the drill, sprint out of the small area game and get back in line. And that, I mean, it's like the mice with the cheese, like, sprint out of the drill, get back in line, and that conditions you for later in the year. Like, hey, I'm just sprinting. Like, my shot's over, I'm sprinting back. And I think that's a huge emphasis I know we put on in our organization, Toph. Like you see it. Like, everyone, like our goalie guy, Redmond Brow, like, his job on the ice is to be the sprint out of the drill guy. And he loves that. You know, Red's a saint, and he just loves being the sprint out of the drill guy.
Gonna have to get him to do that in my practices. I like it. That's good stuff. The other thing too, like, as we're talking about this, obviously we're trying to, you know, limit the amount of time and space, and we're trying to play the game on our own terms and stuff. One thing that I talk about with my teams and like in my practices, I very rarely do D zone. Very rarely do D zone because I don't want to play in the D zone.
100%.
I want to track so hard in the neutral zone. For me, neutral zone wins games. Like, the team that's better in the neutral zone is going to win the games 95% of the time.
Absolutely.
And so, like, you know, just having that mentality, and I even tell my guys, like, I'm not working. I don't work on D zone. Like, I don't want to because I don't want to play in the D zone. And just, again, it goes back to that mentality. Like, what's your identity as a team? How hard are you going to be to play against? And defining what hard to play against means. And a lot of that is just the track.
100%.
So, well, awesome stuff, guys. Well, if you want some track drills, get in touch with us. Or, Ras, put you on the spot here. There's a lot of drills at icehockeysystems.com. What do you think?
There are a lot of drills at icehockeysystems.com. I think for any coach looking to expand your knowledge database of the game, drills, general knowledge, videos, tactics, check out icehockeysystems.com.
Absolutely. They got an associations tab on there too now, so you can get this for your entire organization, and it's awesome. We use it here. I use it extensively to plan all my practices and stuff. It's a great resource for any coach, and there's even a lot of parent education stuff on there. Our Hockey Think Tank Survival Guide is on there. And how about gel sticks, Wardo? How about gel sticks?
Yeah, I think we talk about it all the time, Rob. I think... when these young athletes, I mean, you can't shoot enough pucks, and using gel sticks, the weighted training sticks for me, out in the garage or in the backyard, there's nothing better to work on your shot than gel sticks, and you can reach out. I know John Lounsbury is my guy, so he'll appreciate this. But gel sticks, great training aid to work on your shot and your shot velocity, so gel sticks for sure. Get them today.
There we go. We also have Train Heroic. Vex isn't here right now, but we got to throw in the Train Heroic. It's an app on your phone that Jeff has all of his off-ice exercises on, and he's trained literally thousands of people over it. It's a great value, low cost, and you guys know Vex a little bit. Like, he's got a hot mom's workout too for all the moms out there that want to get into it. So Train Heroic, go there, download that on your app today, and look for Ripped Hockey, R-I-P-T Hockey. Little shout out to Vex there. And thank you to all the listeners. We hope you enjoyed this one. I had fun. You guys have fun doing this?
Yeah, it was a blast.
Absolutely. Great time.
So we'll continue to keep doing these throughout the year. And thank you all for listening. And we hope you have a great week.
Thanks, Toph.